Doug Hogue, entrepreneur and owner of Kenai River Brewing Company. Doug, how are you doing, sir?
It's a pretty good day.
It's good to hear from you. How are things going at Kenai River? How's business in the tail end of COVID here? At least what we hope is the tail end.
Yeah, so hopefully we're going to see some improvements. Yeah, we're still slugging along on the manufacturing side of life. We've been, you know, just making beer. We really haven't stopped since the whole thing began a year ago. But draft sales are, of course, down. That's to be expected when you have a lot of restaurants that are closed, Anchorage being one of the biggest markets in the state. So when they can't sell beer, then that's going to impact that. However, our can sales have been really good and pretty steady. So we've been able to kind of make up a little ground by selling cans, and that's obviously the package stores and for the to-go market. So that's been good.
Well, speaking of cans, a little birdie told me that you changed your can size.
We did. So the other byproduct of the COVID problems is the shortage of aluminum cans. Kind of the same situation where there's a lot of a draft beer available. It needs to go into some kind of package because so many restaurants around the country have been closed. So all the cans are being bought off. And we're not talking just beer here. We're talking soda and water and everything else that's being put into cans now. So just way more than could be produced. So really, for us small companies, it was pretty much shut down as far as getting cans. They were diverting their resources to the bigger guys. So we had to locate a new source. And we were able to get some cans actually from the Philippines. And with that, of course, it runs into a more European-sized can. And so we're running 330 milliliter as opposed to 350 milliliter cans. So 11.1 ounces as opposed to 12. So they're same diameter, just a little shorter. I kind of like it. They're pretty cute. So, yeah, that's what we got.
Did you have to do any alterations on your label?
Oh, yeah. So every label had to be redone. The machine had to be retooled so that it could can this different size. So when it was all said and done, the transition to this different can was pretty considerable, but not as considerable as not canning at all. So, yeah.
Yeah, you can't even a box there. Those are the only size cans you can get. Then it's kind of what you got to roll with, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And like I said, we really like the cans. They look great. The labels, since we were going with a more custom size anyways, and there was a little bit of an increased cost on our labels, we went ahead and made them a little bit longer. So they do wrap a little bit further around the can. I think the whole package just looks a little bit nicer, pretty refined. So every can at this point will be in the 330 milliliter with a label that we do. However, we do still have some Sunken Island cans because we had just gotten a batch before the whole COVID shortage struck. So we do have those. And our machine is very flexible, so it's nice. We can basically just adapt the machine, run a bunch of Sunken Island cans. So those will be standard 12-ounce pre-printed cans. Then everything else will be labels.
So what's your plan for the long haul, assuming, like I said, one day we get this behind us? Are you planning to go back to 12 ounces, stay with this one? What do you think?
At this point, I'm leaning towards staying with this one. I think it's just a slightly different looking package. It doesn't change the footprint in a retail store, so it takes up the same amount of space. So going through all the expense of changing labels and everything else and the fact that we really like the way it looks, I think we'll probably just stick with what we're doing.
So what else is happening? You guys got any plans for upgrades to the kitchen or seating or anything in the near future?
Yeah, you know, on the restaurant side of life, no giant changes at this point. You know, we're always kind of waiting for legislative action of updating liquor laws.
Yeah, that's going to be my next question.
So I haven't done a whole lot of changes there, and we might consider that if we can actually run our restaurant like a real restaurant, that would be cool. But until we can do that, there probably won't be any major changes. The outdoor seating is still really nice in the summertime. We do have the tent, which makes it nice, even if it's a little bit rainy. We did put a couple natural gas-fired heaters on the back patio, and if the temperature, I'm gonna say 30 degrees is kind of my cutoff. But if it's 30 degrees or a little bit warmer, you can ask one of the servers if you want to be outside to turn those on, and they're actually it's pretty comfortable. I've been out there quite a bit. I was actually out there drinking a beer when it was 16 degrees out, and it wasn't bad. I was, you know, maybe a little chilly, but it wasn't horrible. So it's nice just kind of being able to be outside. You know, people like to be outside and drink beer. It's a great thing.
Yeah, I'm really disappointed we didn't get to do the Frozen River Fest this year. You know, that,
right.
I always enjoy the heck out of being outside, even if it is miserable cold.
So. Exactly, yeah, yep.
So you brought up the magic word of the legal side. I was going to ask you about that. SB9, I had a discussion last month, I don't know if you caught it, with Lee Ellis about it. And okay. One of the things he was talking about was the possibility under the new rules of a place like Kenai River ditching the retail brewery license and going straight for a restaurant eating place and just having a manufacturing license and a restaurant eating place license. So is that something that you would contemplate, and what would that entail as a way as changes for your operation?
The biggest thing for us that it would change is that we could operate more reasonable hours. So in the summertime in Alaska, having to close your doors basically at 8 p.m. is a pretty absurd rule. We've done it, but it doesn't make a whole lot of sense when the sun is blazing and the people are just coming off the river from fishing, and then they get angry at us because we're closed. Well, obviously we don't have any recourse in that because it is a state law. So that would be something that we would change, certainly in the summertime, is having those extended hours. Being able to serve beer from other breweries, I mean, that's something I've always wanted to do because I love our beer, but I also like being able to showcase things that are occurring at places where people might not go, you know. So if they have a limited time down here fishing on the Kenai, well, they might want to try some beer that's brewed up in Anchorage or in Fairbanks or something like that. So I think that would be a fun thing to do. And then having wine, because there are a lot of people that they don't drink beer, so this gives that opportunity to bring in, whether it's the husband or the wife that doesn't drink beer, well, then they can both come in and still enjoy a beverage with their meal.
Don't forget cider.
Yeah, and we do have some great cideries, that's for sure.
Assuming that the day ever comes SB9 gets passed, that would be how you would look to move, would be towards getting having a manufacturer's license and then a restaurant eating place.
Yeah, mostly. It makes the most sense business-wise, and it kind of creates a level playing field for everybody that's involved. So if you have a restaurant, then you should be able to run your place as a restaurant. And if you have brewing equipment, you should be able to run that as a manufacturer. And if you want to distribute your stuff, it shouldn't matter, you know, if you have a manufacturing license or a restaurant eating place license, you should be able to send that beer around. So that's what I like about it. It makes it, I guess, more levelized for everybody.
Well, you're more hooked in than me. You think there's any chance it's going to make it through this year?
I don't know. I really don't speculate it on any longer because I have in the past. I mean, how many years have we been, you and I, been?
Well, I went and looked it up. We had Michiki on back in December of 2017. So
okay.
we've been flopping this fish for coming up on 5 years now, I think, because
right.
We're talking about it before I even had him on the radio show here. So, yeah.
Yeah, and that's just actually trying to get it through to pass as a law. And then the years that we've been all working on the rewrite of the whole package, it's like, man, this has been a lot of years. And so, yeah, I don't hold out any kind of hope at this point. And it's just, when it happens, it'll happen. We'll lobby for it, of course, because it just makes sense for the state of Alaska to bring things more up to date instead of being so archaic.
I don't know, Doug. It's kind of hard to try and get the legislature to do something that makes sense. I think we might be on the wrong path here. We should come up with some crazy, crazy thing and then try and sell that to them, and they would probably go for it.
I know, right?
So you guys got any new releases of anything that you're going to be turning loose anytime soon?
We did release something, but it was primarily just up in the Anchorage market. We're going to have some draft of the same product down here, but we did this fun little collaboration with Gold Rush Liquors, the store up in Anchorage. And the one manager, he's been involved in the beer world for a number of years. And he's a brewer himself, Chris Carpentier. So he came down. This was back in November. He came down and brewed with us. We spent the whole day, and we made a Baltic porter. And it's called Raven's Rush, and that kind of runs into Raven for the darkness of the beer, and then the Rush, basically Gold Rush Liquor, had a label designed, and that's actually in Gold Rush Liquor right now. It is incredibly delicious, very smooth. You can tell it's lagered beer for sure. So we're going to have some of that available in draft. We have some cans here, but we didn't keep a whole lot. We wanted them to be able to get as much as they could up there. Yeah, a great beer, and I'll definitely advertise primarily doing Instagram right now. So as soon as that beer is on tap, I will put a posting out.
So you actually used a lager yeast to make it?
We sure did, yeah.
I thought you'd sworn off that after that Doppelbach fiasco.
You know, I say that every summer. It's like, no, I'm never going to do anything like that because it just ties up my fermenter too long. But then I get in the wintertime, and it's like, you know what, let's just do this. We don't have to keep this beer turning around. We can take a break and make a nice, relaxed lager. So we did it.
Good. I'm looking forward to trying it. What did it come in strength-wise?
7%. So, okay. We didn't go real large. It's a nice, very, very drinkable beer.
Got some heft to it, though.
Yeah, it does.
Well, it sounds good.
Chris also sent down two bourbon barrels that he had. And so we put 50 gallons in the one. Actually, it was a Buffalo Trace bourbon barrel. So we put 50 gallons of the Raven's Rush in that. And we had it in there for about 2 months. Absolutely perfect. A lot of oak, a lot of bourbon. And we have since moved that to a bright tank. So we're going to start to slowly carve that up. I haven't decided what I'm going to do with it yet. But it is so good that, yeah, I can't even describe the... Whenever we pull a sample out when we were testing it through the last month and a half, and there's a couple of customers in there, would give it to them, and they're ready to buy the entire barrel if they could. So yeah, pretty tasty.
Well, you should probably save some of it for August. Fingers crossed that we have a beer festival again. Yeah,
I know, right? Yeah, that would be worthy. He also sent us an Elijah Craig barrel, and we put 50 gallons of this current batch of Winter Warlock in there. That you would never guess it as Winter Warlock. It tastes like a little bit of a oaked vanilla flavor with just like a really smooth bourbon. It is so good.
Sounds good. Well, all that sounds yummy. I'll keep an eye on Instagram to see when you put it on tap.
We're doing another project with Brown Jug, and that is kind of selling the gummy bear beer in cans. They really like that beer. They like selling it. They set up a big display in the store, you know, with these giant gummy bears and whatnot. So that one will be floating up there in about a week, I think. So then they'll have a new batch going in.
Well, great. Anything else?
I think that's primarily it. Yeah, mm-hmm. we're just going along. We're anxious to hit the summer season, hoping that it's going to be a good one. And yeah, we're ready.
Yeah, I think everybody around here is ready for a good summer.
Yeah.
After last year's. Anybody who's trying to sell anything is really hoping for a better one.
Yep, for sure.
All right. Well, hey, Doug, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us. Really appreciate it. And like I said, we'll keep our eyes glued to your Instagram looking for those new beer releases.
Sounds great. Thanks a lot, Bill.
All righty. Thank you. This is KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. We'll be right back with our next segment. For this month's beer style segment, I'd like to shift gears a bit and talk about something a little different than a specific beer style. I want to talk a bit about a movement out in the craft beer world you may or may not have heard of. It's called Flagship February. The concept behind Flagship February is simple. There are, by some estimates, in excess of 22,000 operating breweries in the world today. At a very conservative count of only a dozen brands per brewery, that makes in excess of 250,000 different beers being sold around the globe, plus, of course, the multitude of special releases that for some breweries number in the hundreds per year. That's a lot of beer. Increasingly, it seems that what leads people to drink a beer is less whether or not it's good than it is whether or not it's new, or better still, rare. While this is not necessarily a bad thing, new brands and styles keep things exciting after all, what sometimes gets lost in the special release noise this produces are the beers that paved the way for the remarkable global beer market we presently have at our disposal, or in other words, the flagship beers that got us here. The idea of Flagship February is not to try to shore up sales of the various beers of various breweries. That's the job of the marketing and sales division of those breweries. The thinking is that flagship beers have much to teach new drinkers and remind old drinkers, and if they fall off the radar so far that they disappear completely, we will all be that much poorer for it. So, what makes something a flagship beer? The origin of the term flagship are appropriately nautical, befitting a beverage that's about 95% water. According to Merriam-Webster, its first definition comes from the Navy, with the flagship being, quote, a vessel used by the commanding officer of a group of naval ships, characteristically a flag officer entitled by custom to fly a distinctive flag. Used more loosely, it is the lead ship in a fleet of vessels, typically the first, largest, fastest, most heavily armed, or best known, end quote. Over time, the definition has moved onto land and is now more commonly used to designate the finest, largest, or most important one of a group of things. So, for example, if you have a chain of stores, the location that is your best or biggest is your flagship store. With beer, a flagship is the beer that defines a brewery. It's the one that you immediately think of when you hear the brewery's name, the one that most people associate with that brand. In most cases, it's their best-selling beer and often the one that outsells all their other offerings by a wide margin. A good flagship also allows a brewery to be able to afford the seasonals, specialty beers, and other less profitable beers in their lineup. One might think that the brewery decides which beer is their flagship, but that's not always the case. Often they may expect that a certain beer will be the one that sells the best, but consumers have a different idea. There are numerous examples of this. Deschutes Brewing in Bend, Oregon did not believe their Black Butte Porter would be their best-selling beer, but consumers really took to it, and the rest is history. For many people, especially people above a certain age, a brewery's flagship beer is probably the first non-mainstream beer they drank, with countless stories of the first beer someone enjoyed that made them love good beer. In my case, that was Anchor Brewing's Anchor Steam. For other folks around my age, it might be Sierra Nevada's Pale Ale, Sam Adams' Boston Lager, or even the long-defunct Pete's Wicked Ale. For each of us, these beers are our cultural signposts in the recent evolution of the global beer market. But flagship beers are also so much more. Although their sales have in recent years been declining, often because people are starting to consider them boring as they chase after the next big thing, a good flagship is the beer that still tastes good as you remember it, whenever you go back to it. It's a brewery's flagship precisely because it tastes exactly the same from bottle to bottle, can to can, and draught to draught, with a consistency that will always be the hallmark of good brewing. So this February, I'd encourage you to pay a return visit to an old friend. Seek out that beer you have fond memories of, but haven't tasted recently. Does it taste the same as you remember, or has your palate changed? In a beer world that's awash in new releases and faddish beer styles, it's often refreshing and enlightening to take a step back and revisit the classics. After all, they became classics for a reason. Now, if you excuse me, I need to go out and pick up a six-pack of Anchor Steam. That's pretty much it for this month's show. Hope you enjoyed it. But before we go, instead of a closing quote this month, I'm going to close with a definition. Cenosilicophobia is defined as the fear of an empty beer glass. I'm thinking of starting a foundation to combat this dread condition. If and when I do, your donations will be welcome. Cheers.